Attempt number two. Good morning, Gabe.
Good morning, Jay.
I got something for you. I found out about a very innovative way for everybody who listens to this podcast to get a discount on the next thing they're looking to purchase. Okay. This is not some like social media like hack. This isn't some giveaway that we're doing on the newsletter. This is going to work. Okay. Now I haven't proven it yet, but I have an idea. And a friend of mine told me about this. So you ready? You're going out there and you're buying something new. Let's just say you're buying a new airplane or a new tire for your airplane or a new propeller, right? And you go up to the guy and the guy says to you, hey, the propeller or the plane or whatever is going to be, the object is $500. And you ask him, is there a good guy deal? And if I ask you, hey, is there a good guy deal? What are you going to respond with?
We don't offer discounts.
Well, no, just you're going to say, what's a good guy deal, right?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to say, you know, I'm a good guy. You're a good guy. We should both get a deal on this particular deal. And so a friend of mine told me that it worked for them and I'm going to attempt it on the next thing that I go and purchase. I'm going to let you know how it goes. So it's this. Hey, do you have any good guy deal? You're going to be like, dude, what's a good guy deal? Be like, you know, you good guy, I'm a good guy. Like, there should be a discount here and see how it goes.
Dude, if that works for you, I will be surprised.
It's going to work. You know, Ash and I, we read this book, or she read this book on like hotels. And this guy basically laid the framework on how you could get better deals at hotels and whatnot. And part of it was giving money at the front desk to get an upgraded room. Have you ever done that before?
Mm-mm.
So the first time I did it, it was so awkward, but I thought about this good guy thing. So the first time I did this, I show up at a hotel. It was probably like a Marriott or it was something. I can't remember what it was. And what Ashley told me is that she read this book and that when you go and you go check in with like your ID and your credit card, you also slip them some money, which is super foreign to give the front desk person money. Normally you're, you know, tipping other people, but I had never really tipped a front desk person. You just figure their job is pretty cut and dry, but it isn't. And so the first time I did it, I think I gave $50. It was either 20 or 50. I think it was 50. And there's a risk there because if you give them 20 or 50 bucks, I've never done more than that. Nothing could happen or you can get an upgrade. So now I've done this probably 20 times and every time except for two, I've gotten an upgrade. And so what you do is you go up there and you put your credit card, you put your ID, and then you slip like a little 20 or 50. You say, hey, this is for you. But the first time I did it, it was so awkward. I was so uncomfortable and I didn't know how to do it. And so like after he already gave us the room, I was like, this is for you. And it was just so awkward. So the guy ended up calling our room after and upgraded us later after I gave him the money. But it's worked almost every time except for two. So the risk you give is if you give a 20 or a 50 or whatever you give, there's no guarantee you're going to get a better room. And so if there is no rooms available or if they're not feeling it that day, you just wasted that money and now it's just a tip for them. So anyways, it is worth trying. I am going to try the good guy deal. And if that works, I'm going to share it here on the podcast and someone's going to get a better tire discount or some discount on something because of it.
I like how you opened up with plane propeller.
Plane propeller. Like, I mean, how many times do you buy a plane propeller? And then when you do, you got to ask for a deal, of course. Like,
dude, so the light's at the end of the tunnel here. First of all, going back to what you were just saying, it's funny that you mentioned that because
you don't think it's going to work.
Well, no. Well, the good guy deal. No, I don't think that's going to work. I think that if it works, it's a fluke. But the whole like tipping front desk when you go to the hotel, I mean, one of the things, and I think I mentioned this on the podcast a little bit before, but you know, me and Ariel have been talking a lot about like, you know, our goals for next year and so forth. And I think one thing that really struck me, Dave Ramsey talks about this a lot, is like being like super generous, being a big part of like the five things he recommends for actually being really financially successful, like giving without any expectation and setting these goals of like, hey, I'm going to give this much, because it also pushes you to like, you need to be to a certain degree successful financially, right? You've talked about this ad nauseum. So in that light, I worked as a server for this brunch spot in Manhattan a while back. And I only did it for one summer, but that summer was enough to like realize that, dude, you got a tip. Regardless of what your service is, regardless of like, if it was like, you know, like exceeded expectations or fell under expectations. Like, dude, being a server is so, so tough, so thankless. You deal with so much bullshit. And a lot of that gets spread to, like, you know, the bar backs and the runners and stuff. Like, to me, I've never agreed with this, like, well, you know, my food came out late or it came out cold or like something was wrong. Like, you know, and you're like docking how much you would tip them based off of that. Like, to me, that seems like, no, you're not there to like, and Louis C.K. actually has a really funny bit about this. You're not there to be like, this wasn't a good experience, so you're going to get half of the tip I would have given you. Like, just give a good tip every single time. Like, okay, period, well, just do it.
Pulling on that thread then, how about this new modern day tip where basically everything asks for a tip? What is the rule there? So as you know, like I generally think of myself as a relatively generous.
Yeah, yeah. And as someone that knows you, I think you're a very generous person, by the way.
Oh, thank you. And so I try and live by a code that I always give when a tip comes around. But dude, okay.
I know.
I'll give you an example. All right. Yesterday, I take my son and we're up for a day skiing, snowboarding, and we're checking out. Friends of ours happen to want to meet us at the Ritz-Carlton. So, you know, it's going to be expensive. So we ended up meeting them there just real quick to as a meeting point. So before we jump on the road, I'm like, hey, man, let's grab a quick bite so we can have something on the road. I got a breakfast burrito, a croissant sandwich, and a cold brew and a matcha. Those four items. Right. It was $60 for those four items. And then the thing comes up on the screen. It says, do you want a tip? And I'm like, damn, it was so tempting not to, because dude, you're already paying this huge premium. So what happens there for you? What, like, let's just say you're at a place and there's zero, like actual making of the thing, but there's a tip function that comes up. What do you do?
I mean, now that like all those iPads, it's funny. There's so many funny memes, right? About like, whenever you see this iPad that flips, it just means you're going to be like forced to tip. Yeah. I always do it. And I do whatever the minimum option is.
Yeah.
Cause it feels consistent. B, like, it also just feels like, I don't know. And maybe a big part of this is like the only places that we really go, like, we live in a small town here in Seguin. Like, you know, the people working here in any service industry, even if it's like a big place like Starbucks, like, I'd like to think that like it's all going to them and that just feels like the right thing to do. But it is, I can completely understand how it feels like it's getting out of hand. It's funny.
It's
we were just
a little out of hand.
It's getting, and like in California, it's a completely different beast. We were just, we just went to San Diego with my parents and my parents were asking like, what's this 4%? Because the restaurant we went to had like the 4%, like just surcharge.
Yes.
So they had the gratuity included because we were a big group, but then there was this other 4%, and you know, it's a big group. So the 4% stood out because it wasn't like chump change. It was like, you know, it adds a significant amount to the check, because my dad picked up the check for like dinner for all of us one night. And I was like, yeah, man, like it's just the surcharge that they charge for living wage. But that to me seems weird, because if you're also expected to do gratuity, like just raise the prices of the food. If like you're trying to, you know, pay the staff a little bit better, it seems weird to like put that as an additional surcharge, but we don't have that in Texas. So that's not a big thing here, but that's where like it kind of gets weird. But anyway, just to like kind of like, you know, tie a loop on this, the reason I brought this up originally is I like that approach, because I think it's in line with this, like, just give without expectation, because if you do get the room upgrade, that's a bonus. But just going into it, like knowing that like, hey man, like I can make this person's day, like period, right? With like $20 or $50, which in the grand scheme of things, I think that like, isn't that big a deal for maybe the impact that it can have. So I haven't done this in the past, but I'm almost convincing myself of, I'd love to do it, because it would be in line with this idea that we've been talking a lot about with Ariel, just being more generous in general. And then like, dude, if you get an upgrade, it's just a cherry on top, as opposed to being the expectation of what you're doing it for.
Yeah. I mean, that's a better way of looking at it. I mean, but in general, there's an upgrade. If you give like, I want to say, generally the minimum I've done is 20 and the most I've done is 50. I imagine if you give like it depends on the hotel too. Like,
sure. You can't be throwing down a 20 at like a place where they're going to be like,
if you're at the Ritz, you're probably not throwing down a 20, but you know, for me too, like a lot of times when I'm traveling for work, I actually prefer Courtyard Marriott. So like if I'm with the family, we stay at nicer places, but if I'm by myself, my preference, if I could pick any hotel I want, My preference is a Courtyard Marriott, just because for
not a sponsor of the podcast.
Not a sponsor of the podcast. I wish they were. My preference is the Courtyard because I used to travel there for so many years for CrossFit, and they would always put us up at Courtyard Marriott's. And so I became super comfortable with like the smell, the layout, shitty breakfast in the morning, like all of that stuff I became really comfortable with. Like, I know I'm going to wake up. There's going to be coffee that's already brewed. It might not be the best, but I have coffee. There's going to be some type of egg and like weird, like meat patty that's going to be available. And I just know it's going to be there. I don't have to worry about things. And so, yeah, my preference is a Courtyard, but if you are at a Courtyard, typically I don't do like the whole, you know, upgrade thing. Cause there really isn't any upgrades available, but
right.
Based on your premise, maybe I should be doing it just as a generosity thing.
Yeah. And again, I think that
right we might be starting a new trend. We might be starting a new trend right now. This podcast might be starting a new trend. Everybody, you know, if you're a hotel front clerk, lobby, you know, person, we're starting a trend right now.
But I love this idea, man, of just like really trying to be like more generous and how that indirectly like attracts more financial success. Like the mindset that you need for that, I mean, if you guys want to check out Dave Ramsey, talks about this a lot, and it had a big impact on me, because when you hear his like 5 steps for being financially successful, like the first four make perfect sense, right? Like live below your means, like get out of debt. Like you think about it, it's like perfect. And then he gets to the fifth one, and it's this idea of just being, you know, really generous, and it's a little bit more indirect, but that was the most powerful one out of the five. So definitely something that we're focusing on this year, big time.
Yeah. We talk about it a lot, but the more you make, the more you could give. And you know, if you're not making, you can't go give and give to things you care about. You know, like Ashley and I, we care about, we do some stuff for the local high school we went to. We do a lot of stuff with them. We were able to do an endowment. So, you know, that was kind of cool, because you could send a kid to school that maybe couldn't have afforded it. And then obviously we do stuff for pediatric cancer. Those are things that like attract us. But then, you know, yeah, I totally get what you're saying. By the way, while we're talking on this podcast, I can't help but notice that I switched up my background. Just like I pivoted the camera from a black background to like a background that I have like up in my office of like a Team USA jersey, if you're just listening to this, and a picture from the 2008 CrossFit Games in Aromas. And dude, I have the Man in the Arena poster. It is so weak. It is so weak. Like,
it's just a little small.
Bro, it is so bad. You can't read it. You can't see it. I got to get a new one, man. That's embarrassing. That's really embarrassing, actually. Anyways, that's a good quote. That's a good quote, though, if you haven't checked it out. Almost as good as a gas station ready.
Oh boy. Yeah, it's a good one. It's powerful for sure.
Where are we going?
Dude, one thing that I wanted to talk to you about, and I don't know how, maybe you're more into this stuff now, because I know Caden's super into sports, but with the football playoffs going on, there's just a couple like stories that like I was thinking about that are so fucking cool, man. Like, you know how people always gravitate towards the underdog? There's something about the underdog, because I think it makes them more relatable, right? And one thing that has been
The Lions 30 years or something like that? Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah. So, no, not specifically, but there's been a lot of cool storylines in the football playoffs now. And there's a whole bunch of different like ways we can take this. Like, we talk about the sport of CrossFit a lot and how like it having more like storylines and more like, you know, reasons for people to buy into on like an emotional level would make the sport a lot more successful. And there's just been some really cool stories in the NFL playoffs this year. And this is going to come out a week later, so there'll be another weekend of games, but anyway, the Eagles lost, which I was very happy about because I'm a Giants fan.
Oh,
but
man. It
one was
of our
a little...
really good friends is a big Eagles fan.
So oh, man, dude, yeah. That sucks, because they like, dude, they had a New York Mets style collapse to the end of their season. I've been there many, many times.
You know what?
Dude, they started the season like 10-0 or 11-1 or something, and then lost either 7 of their 8 last games or 6 of their 7 last games, and just like, dude, not good.
Well, on that note, Caden and I were listening to the Travis and Jason Kelce podcast on the way up to Tahoe.
So this is what I was going to bring up. Go ahead.
Was
this the one they recorded after he lost?
No. And this was before. This is when they found out they were going to play, or they already knew they were going to playoffs. And then they already knew they were going to playoffs. So like the final game didn't really matter, but I think they wanted to build momentum or something. So they left their starters in. Dude, I felt so bad listening to this. It's like, you left your starters in and you still lost? Like, bro, that sucks. Like
dude, and they lost to the New York Giants that have been terrible all year.
Oh, but at least if you didn't have your starters in, you could be like, oh, yeah, we lost because we didn't have our starters in. But they lost and they had their starters in. That was not a good way to get into momentum to go into the playoffs.
But what I was going to bring up, yeah, dude, that's tough. What I was going to bring up is, so Jason Kelce, so obviously Travis Kelce has been, you know, headlines and everywhere because of the whole Taylor Swift thing. Like, there's that whole joke of like Taylor Swift putting Travis Kelce on the map, which is super funny. I don't know if you watch that trend on social media where wives would say that to their husbands and film their reaction and they get so pissed off. Because no. Travis Kelce is like a great player in his own right. And for a lot of women to be like, wow, like Taylor Swift really put him on the net map. But anyway, Jason Kelce has also kind of benefited from some of this stuff being front and center because they have their podcast and they're just like, they had the documentary about the two brothers, which did you watch?
I watched, well, you mean the one about
the documentary about both of them getting to the playoffs and playing in the Super Bowl.
It's on Netflix. But I thought it was kind of more front and center on the one who just retired, the center, Jason.
Yeah, it was, but it was kind of
it was a good documentary.
It was really good. It was really good. So all of that has kind of gotten him more front and center. And anyway, Jason Kelce is like super well liked nowadays. And I think a part of that, tying it back to like what we talk about on the podcast and stuff, is he's such a relatable, like if you watch that documentary, like he's a dad, like it's his daughter's first. And it's a big reason he's retiring.
For sure.
Because he's like at the top of his game. Like he's still one of the top.
$10 million for extending his contract 1 year.
Dude, and he's like, he's still arguably maybe not the best center in the league. Some people say that the center actually on the Kansas City team is a little bit better, but he's like among the best out there. Like he's by no means at the end of his career and he's hanging it up. And a big part of why he's doing that is, you know, to be with his family. Like there's also like injury concerns and stuff. And, you know, watching what some of the people that play that position and play really long careers, you know, they end up pretty messed up. But I think that, you know, him being able to pivot, same way we've talked about, like, hey, like this is your job at one point. And then at one point, like it's going all in on this over here, and watching like, you know, how he talks and the relationship he has with his wife and his daughters, like that to me has been super cool to watch and has honestly made him like suit. Like I'm big fan of Jason Kelce, and it made it hard because I really wanted the Eagles to lose, but I really like him as like a player and some of the stuff he puts out. I think he's a very train hard type of guy, which got me pumped up.
Do we got to get him on the app? We got to get him on the workouts. No, I
get him on the podcast. Imagine.
I agree with you though. I think that, that's why those documentary type, videos. I mean, first off, they're kind of an anomaly, right? Because the two brothers have their own podcast. They're both like super high level. Like they're not like media
Hall of Fame, NFL Hall of Fame. They're both like sure into the Hall of Fame of the NFL, which is like, you know,
yeah, they're not like mediocre NFL players. And then they're both brothers. And then, you know, and then one of them's dating Taylor Swift. Like it's just like a lot of like anomalies just occur back to back to back to create this thing. And they're obviously they come off as like super cool dudes. So you want, they're very likable. Like you want to see them succeed, which I think is great. But I think that the thing that CrossFit hasn't done well, and I mean, jiu-jitsu does this a little bit, but even then they could probably do a better job too, is like just storytelling, man. Like some of these guys in jiu-jitsu come from Brazil with nothing and they live in like the back of a gym for years until they make something of themselves. And like, I think with CrossFit, the more they could tell stories, the more engaged people would be to see them win or lose. I don't know where it's going to go, man, but I think they need more of like this Kelce type documentary momentum, but it's got to be the right people and they have to come off with the right culture. Like if you do a documentary on one of the CrossFit Games people and they don't come off right, like it's just going to hurt their brand. You know, like long form can either make or break somebody, which is one of the reasons why I want to continue to get more long form, because I think it's an easy way to engage with people, let them know more about our life, what we have going on, and feel more connected to training hard and getting after it.
Yeah, for sure, man. I think that it's so, like, this is perfect example of how powerful that storytelling can be to make people that, you know, weren't fans, like be really invested in watching the games and following these players, following these teams for sure. But yeah, man, super cool how this player can like, he is an absolute animal beast on the field and then can be such a like nurturing father of two girls, you know, and I think they have three girls now.
He doesn't look that big on like the I mean, it's all relative, but like he doesn't look huge for a center. Like I don't know what my perception of a center would be.
He's not super big. So one of the things that makes him really unique as a player is that he plays center, but he's super athletic, like super athletic. Like he ran a really impressive 40 back in the combine. Like he's revolutionized what the center position is in many ways, because he's not just like smash mouth, like just like super strong. He can play a lot of the angles for run plays and stuff that other centers couldn't do because they were just big. He's really athletic, which is interesting. It's also interesting to see when players come in and like change what the definition of that being successful in that position is. I think
Yeah.
that's super cool too.
So Ashley and Caden are really big. They're definitely more into football than I am. Like I could, I mean, I'm fine. I would definitely consider myself a fair weather fan in all sports. Like if I show up and the Sharks are in the playoffs, like I'm gonna go there. I'm gonna root for them. I'm gonna act like I know what I'm talking about. I'm gonna go find a jersey that I could borrow from a buddy and I'm gonna wear it. And same thing at the Niners, same thing with like, San Francisco Giants. Like I'm gonna be that guy who just wants to look the part. It act the part when I'm at the event, but outside of that, I don't keep up with a single game all season. So it turns out our friends invited us to go to the playoff game this weekend. So we're recording this on a Thursday, right? Today's no, today's Friday. We're going to a playoff game on Sunday.
The Niners?
Yeah,
Who are they
and
playing again? They're playing Tampa Bay? You don't know.
I don't know.
You don't know.
That's so bad.
I'm
That's
pretty
so
sure.
bad.
I think they're playing the Bucks. I can
No,
look
no,
it up
no,
real
no, no. They're
quick.
playing the no, no. They're playing Green Bay, and the only reason why I know that
Yes, they are playing
is
Green Bay. That's
that
right.
okay. So, but yeah. So we're going to the game.
I don't even know who they're playing. I just want both teams to have fun.
I just want there to be no, but Purdy is a good example of someone who's like mystery relevant. I love his story, man. Comes from like the bottom, and could you imagine like the grit, like all the shit that he went through to kind of get to where he's at now, not to mention he got injured and he's coming back and or he came back. And so I'm super excited for the playoff game. Ashley and Caden, they love watching this stuff. So she's gonna be all fired up. I'm going there. I mean, I get fired up when I'm there. I just don't really choose to
You're gonna
watch.
have a good time. Hell yeah.
Of course, dude. Of course
Dude,
you're
but
gonna.
that's the other story that I was tracking over the weekend that I didn't know about. That's super cool. So Josh Allen, the QB of the Buffalo Bills, similar to Purdy, but I'm not super familiar with his story. I was doing a little bit of reading on him, and he was like not recruited at all out of high
Did a
school.
documentary, you're talking about the documentary they did on Josh. Didn't they do one on him too?
Maybe I haven't watched it. I literally was just like curious because I saw a headline and like literally read his Wikipedia. But he was like not drafted or not highly touted out of high school and didn't give up, went to a junior college, like did really well there. Then just by happenstance, the coach of, I believe it was Wyoming, so an actual D1 school, saw him play, brought him into the school, and now he's taking the Bills to multiple playoff runs. And the interesting thing there, because there's a lot of similar stories, like Tom Brady is a very similar story, right? Like he was like undrafted or drafted really low, like, but he was just like, I'm gonna be the best of the best. And I think that when it comes to some of these like extraordinary stories in sports, and I think it applies to everything in business, being successful, however you want, I think that there's a lot more people than we realize that have the skill set to make it. But there's very few people that can endure not being immediately successful and keep going. Like, think about if Josh Allen would have given up because, he's a QB in high school and no big colleges want him. So, like, what's the rational thing to do there? The rational thing to do is, like, all right, well, I'm going to go to school and get a degree and get a job because, like, what are the chances I'm going to make the NFL? Like, a college doesn't even want me. But to continue and be like, hey, this is my dream and keep going. And, I'm not saying that, people should go out there and be, head in the clouds about what they can be. But it's really interesting to think about these cases where people could have easily have given up and not been some of the best of the best of the best, because not all of these stories, like not Tom Brady's a great example. It's not like Tom Brady was expected to be the best quarterback to ever play from very young to high school to college. If anything, he was told that he wasn't going to be the guy all his life, and he decided to like, buck that and go be the best. So I just think that it's another testament to a lot of success in life is more of a war of attrition to not give up and keep going versus just like, well, your every sign is going to point to the fact that you're going to be successful every step of the way. That doesn't happen, I don't think, for anyone.
Yeah, and I wonder how much of that has to do with the external pressure too, right? Like, I mean, look at like Michael Jordan. Like, he got cut from his what high school or high school. He didn't even make like the freshman basketball team or something like that. And I
Yeah, he
wonder
didn't
how
make the
much.
JV team, I think.
I wonder how much of that too is like early on. You don't have these external pressures to be great because no one really thinks you could do anything, and so then you don't have. I wonder how much of people not making it to where they could possibly get to is because everybody's telling them the whole time, "Wow, you're gonna be great, you're gonna be great, you're gonna be great," and it just is like too much, and they stop. Versus these other guys who maybe there is none of that, and so it's them internally telling themselves they're gonna be great, and then boom, they end up being that. I think. But yeah, like you said, it's the same thing with like whether it's the podcast, whether it's your social, whether it's your business. It's like doom, 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 doom. It's like you said, like the war of attrition. It's the same thing with your fitness, right? It's like, you know,
Same thing.
yeah. I mean, you take, for example, the Def Reset that we're doing, and I think it's been really, really cool to see so many people jump on with the Jocko Fuel, the Origin. I mean, it's been really cool to watch that growth, but it's just a month. Like after that, then it becomes a war of attrition. Like, how long can you stay on that path for indefinitely? Speaking of which, I have some exciting stuff that I'll be doing with Origin that I'm really looking forward to talking about. One of the things that's coming up in the future, have you ever heard of the Ultimate Archery Challenge? The I might have just
No,
told
but I think did, but I think we talked about it on the podcast. You had just
Total
mentioned it.
Archery
Isn't that
Challenge.
something that Froning mentioned, Rich mentioned to you?
Yeah, so the Total Archery Challenge is coming up in, well, they just sent it to me as Q2. So I don't know what that means. I mean, obviously it's Q2. I don't know exactly what month that is, but that could be something like, I think that could be really fun to take a part of. Maybe I'll see if even I can get Caden to go to that one. So Total Archery Challenge. So I'm doing the tactical games in like 4 weeks from when this releases, or maybe like a month or so, 5 weeks. And so like I'm going training today. I'm going training today, which by the way, I want to talk about my last training experience, which really was really interesting. But the Total Archery Challenge, I want to check out coming into Q2. So for those of you listening to this podcast, I'm interested in learning those skills, and supposedly use these like 3D targets that you have to like really like navigate around like trees. It's not like an easy course. And it's like a thing, man. There's a lot of people that are interested in this. What they do is they train for this to get ready for then hunting season. So like these guys are like really, really training so that when they take the shot, like they know they're gonna achieve success and not just hurt an animal, which I think is good.
For sure, man. Do you remember the first time you ever shot a firearm or a bow and arrow? Like, was it something that you were pretty good at from the beginning? Or have you just kind of been exposed to that stuff for like a long time that it's hard for you to remember your first time?
Yeah, I've been exposed for a long time, but like I'll take, for example, bow. Like I was with Jocko and we were shooting bows, and I haven't shot bow for like years. And I think that there's just a big carryover to sport, to other sports, meaning like when you've spent as much time as I have, meeting with as many coaches as I have to learn as many skills, you recognize that just there's a big carryover. Like this week, like I went snowboarding for the first time in probably, I don't know, 2 years. But I used to snowboard all the time, so it was an acquired skill that I already had, and then I was able to translate other things that I'm doing. I don't have to worry about the fatigue factor. My legs stay in good shape. So I think it's a few of those things. Like I'll give you an example. Last week I was training to get ready for the tactical games, and the event that I did, I messaged Jacob Heppner. I said, "Hey, I want to work out. Give me a workout idea." And so the workout idea was you start in like this box, and you essentially run to a place where you do your fitness. And we did, I think it was 5 burpees. Then I ran to another place. I did 10 squats. I ran back. I got into my firing like box. I pulled out my pistol. I loaded a magazine and I shot 4 rounds or whatever it was. And then I did that for excuse me. I shot 5 rounds. I did 5 burpees. I did 10 squats. And I did that for 5 rounds. And at the end, you accumulate how many shots you missed, and each one of those adds 10 seconds to your time. And when you think about it, you're like, dude, 10 seconds doesn't sound like that much, but like you could beat the heck out of the rest of the crew in the workout. But if you miss 3 shots, 4 shots, I mean, that's 40 seconds. That's a lot.
Such a long time.
That's a long time, dude. If you're
That's a
talking
long
about
time.
it. So we were doing
Because how long was the total workout?
the total event that it took me 3 minutes, and
Oh yeah. Yeah,
it took the guys like
that's the difference between a 3 minute Fran and a 220 Fran. That's a huge difference.
huge difference. And so I finished this 3 minute event, And I did it with two other guys. And so I look at my, I'm like, dude, I finished at three. They finished at like, let's just say 3:30. And I'm like, oh, I was like, I felt like I did a good job. And I went over my target. I was like, oh boy, I missed four shots at 15 yards in a 3-inch diameter. Right. And I'm like, dude, now my time is instantly 3:40. So these guys put all their shots on the target. Like I already lost. Like all that work I just did is for nothing. And it turned out that they had some misses too. But it, what I really enjoyed about this experience, and I'm excited to do it again, is when you have headphones on, like what I'm wearing right now, and you also have a tactical vest on, dude, your chest is being compressed. Your ears are feeling like you're in like a cave and your heart rate's jacked up and you got to be able to shoot. I don't know, man. I, for those of you who haven't experienced it, it's definitely cool because you really have to get tuned in. You really have to zone in, find your breath, and then time it effectively. And I find it to be something super, super cool to test. And last week was really like one of those moments where I finished the round. I put my, everything away safely. And I just like smiled ear to ear because I had so much fun doing it. And then seeing if I was able to like actually achieve what I was trying to achieve, you know, which was put all the rounds in that little damn circle. So I'm excited for today.
is everyone shooting? Is everyone shooting? Red dot.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I was. Yeah, we were.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, so. But I mean, everyone in the sport really. Like, no one's competing iron sights, right? Like,
well, they just made an optic a red dot legal for tactical games. So
So it wasn't before.
It wasn't before until
interesting.
This year. And so, yeah, but you know, what was interesting? I had a guy there and he was training me and he taped over my red dot to see, I guess he took a red dot course. And it was interesting because so I shoot with both eyes open and I always have, because a long time ago, Dave Castro, he's a former Navy SEAL, but he's also like the CrossFit Games director for years. He was the original one that kind of taught me how to shoot, I'd say, like, and his premise was always that your two eyes open, because for him, it was more of a tactical thing. Like you want to be able to have this reference point around you. And so in particular with the pistol, it's two eyes open. With a rifle, you could close an eye if you want to, or you should or whatnot. But I've always learned to shoot with both eyes open. And so it wasn't that big of a deal because he covered the red dot. And it's really interesting for anybody listening. If you tape your red dot and you like zone in on the dot only, you can't see shit. You just see tape. But if you zone in on the target itself, you could see right through the red dot. And so that was like the lesson we were working the other day, is like, how do you zone in on the target and not just zone in on the red dot?
That's cool, man. It's fun. It's fun to hear how your journey's going. And it's honestly really interesting to watch. And dude, I'm so excited to hear about how I'm probably not going to be able to be there, but hear about how the competition goes. Because to your point, you know, something that we talk about all the time is all this work that, you know, we're both putting in, you're putting in, I'm putting in, just gives you such a good foundation to like pick up these new skills and be able to do whatever you want to do and not have it be something that is like, you know, an incredible uphill battle, not because, you know, fitness directly translates to being a better marksman, but just because like, you can do the training, like you're not going to be super exhausted to your point. You're going to be more present. You can make the argument, you have the time to go and now invest in these new skills because you don't necessarily have to be training super hard 7 days a week because you have a great foundation. Like your muscle is not going to go anywhere. Your conditioning is not going to go anywhere. Your strength isn't going to go anywhere because you've put in the work to where now you can put fitness into just maintenance mode with like, honestly, like three workouts a week. Now I know that you train every day because it's something you enjoy doing, but you have that capability to where you can literally go all in on this new thing over here, not prioritize this thing over here, and you're not going to lose anything. I think that it's something that I mentioned before, and I think it's really important for people to realize the effort it takes to just maintain strength, muscle mass, and even aerobic conditioning is so much smaller. Like the difference is huge. Like it's like here, really low, versus the effort it takes to build all of that stuff. If you want to build new muscle mass, increase strength, increase aerobic conditioning, you have to work pretty hard, especially if you've been training for as long as we have. But to just maintain, it's actually a lot less than that. And I think that gives you such a cool flexibility to know that your fitness isn't going to go anywhere. Like if, you know, I know you're going to do the CrossFit Open workouts here in a month, and it's not like you've been training for the Open. It's not like you're like, oh man, we're 30 days away or whatever. Like I need to make sure I'm tapering for this. Like, no, you're like tactical games and whatever, but you're going to throw down and you're going to put up some good scores. Why? Because that foundation is there and you've put in the work over years, and it's not going to go anywhere unless you were to like literally sit on your butt for an entire year, which you're not going to do.
Yeah. The only thing that goes away is like one RMs or like heavy.
Sure. Work. Sure.
Okay? Like compared to where I've been at, like, I'll give you an example. I got a message the other day from a buddy of mine. There's this Northern California Classic and it's a local comp. And he's like, hey dude, can you do one of the qualifier workouts? All right. I was like, okay, send me which ones they are. And so he sends me the first one. It was like bear complex. I'm like, nah. Sends me the next one. It was like,
that's on the list for me of things that I will never do again in my life.
Because of putting in the bar on your back?
Yeah. It's just like, dude.
Yeah. I remember one year, dude, I should pull up, you know what? I should, I'm not going to pull up the video, but there is a video. I remember one year we were teaching a seminar at our gym and we did the bear complex, like every minute on the minute for like 30 minutes at some obnoxious weight. I'll have to go back and look at that video. But anyways, so send me that one. The next one was like muscle up or I don't know, pull up or whatever. I'm like,
nah.
And then the next one comes and it's like rowing and burpees over the rower. I was like, yes. I was like, I'm in.
You know that I'm toying around with the idea of doing that today, because today like should be a conditioning day. And I'm like, I'll do it. I'll let you know how it goes.
Jiu-jitsu. So I was at jiu-jitsu and I got this message and I'm like, damn. All right. So I was at jiu-jitsu I had a gentleman in town, Esteban, super nice guy from Redlands PD. And he was in town with me doing some stuff and we were rolling jiu-jitsu and I got this text. And so I text one of our other guys. I'm like, hey, you want to throw down on this? He's like, yeah. So, bro, we left jiu-jitsu, went straight there, and we threw down on this EMOM. Now, for those of you who want to really see what you're capable of, now, I don't know if Gabe is going to get as far as I did. No, he won't get as far as I did. It is going to be...
Son of a bitch.
It is going to be physically impossible. So, it's you start off with like these... I can't remember. It's like 15 cal row, or it's like 12 cal row, something over the burpees of the bar. It's not that hard. It goes 6 minutes. 6 minutes, 6 minutes, 6 minutes, 6 minutes. But at the end, the last 6 minutes is 24 cals in the row, 1 minute, and 16 burpees over the rower. Is that what it is?
I'm looking it up. But yeah, the end seems freaking impossible. Okay, so here it is. It starts with, so every 6 minutes, the calories and burpees change. First 6 minutes, and you're doing this continuously. So first 6 minutes, it's 16 calorie row, 12 for the ladies, 8 burpees over rower. So yeah, seems easy, pretty doable. Then it's still 16 calories, but then it's 10 burpees over the rower.
And you're resetting the rower each time, which makes it different. Yeah.
Makes a huge difference. Then I think this is where it gets like really real, because this is like death row type numbers, because it's a burpee over the row. Minute 12 to minute 18, you're 20 calorie row now and 12 burpees over rower. I think that's honestly a little bit harder than death row. I think 12 burpees over the rower is harder than 15.
No, you're able to step over the rower and you didn't have
You can step over?
Yeah, you could step over. You didn't have to open your hips. So it made a big difference.
Dude, you weren't going to tell me that?
Oh, sorry. I'm just telling you that right now. Yeah.
Then I think that's a little bit easier. 18 to 24, 20 calorie row and 14 burpees over the rower. And then the last 6 minutes, if you're going to finish this, 24 calorie row. So that is, I mean, I gotta be sprinting to finish that. And then 16 burpees over the rower.
Dude. So the technique.
Did you step over the whole time?
So the technique I used was every single round, I did 5 fast burpees jumping over fast. And then I stepped the rest. The reason why I did that is I wanted my body to know what it felt like. So Zach and I were doing this and Zach stepped over the whole time, but he hadn't like acclimated to the speed it was going to require to eventually get to. So he ended up not getting as far as I did. I think one of the reasons was his body wasn't ready for those fast burpees to get
Where did he get to?
I don't think he got the 24. I don't think he got the 24 row.
Didn't get it, but he got to it and didn't get even the first one.
I think so. Yeah. So I got to, I did the 24 calorie row, which is like basically an all out effort row. And as I finished the row, I said to myself, there is no way I could do another whatever minutes of this. So then I did the 16 burpees, which was whatever. I got back to the rower and I ended up getting 16 cals just for the hell of it. But then I was done. So whatever that minute that was. But it's tough if you're listening. It's like, dude, it was one of those things where, like, because of the background that I have and how much time I've spent in fitness, in the middle of it, I realized, like, hey, I need to try and ramp up the burpee to let my body know what that feels like, and then slow it down with step overs to get my heart rate back down, then get back on the rower. So it had a little bit of a death row vibe, but it was just long, man. I mean, dude, I was like on minute 27. It just sucked.
Yeah, dude, that sucks. But to your point, to what you said before, though, because yes, I obviously one rep maxes like that for sure goes away. But I would argue that like that's probably the least, I don't want to say functional, but like the thing that like translates the least to all the other things that you need to do.
Yeah.
Like if how much you can squat for, you know, 10 rounds, 20 reps kind of thing stays relatively the same. That to me seems a lot more important than like what you can do for one to a certain extent, right? Because you can still probably squat something pretty heavy for one if you need it to, but like that extra, whatever it would be, 50, 60, 70 pounds to your all-time best, like that's not really making a difference for what matters to you now.
Yeah, we'll have to see how the open goes. I mean, one of the things that I need to get on is a variable optic. So I have not really shot a rifle with a variable optic before. So I just messaged Dave if I go to his ranch. There's certain things about the tactical games that are making me feel nervous because I just haven't had exposure to them. But that's the only way you're going to learn. Like,
what's a variable optic?
It's like 1 to 10 or 2 to 8. It's like you could basically, it could be sighted in at like 50 yards, yep. Or you could bust it to like, you know, 500 yards, right?
This is your rifle. This is for the rifle, right?
Yeah. But then they start talking about like, dude, the way the weight of the ammunition, the type of ammunition, the wind, there's so many factors I just don't fully understand yet. But at the very minimal, what's required at the tactical games that I'm super fascinating in is how you could be fatigued and still need to think like, well, so like, I'll give you an example. I would finish and the idea is you have to drop the magazine. So you remove any source of feed. Then you have to push the slide forward, shoot, right? And then you have to put the gun in your holster and say clear. Once you're clear, that means that there was no rounds in the magazine. There's no rounds in the chamber because you've already proven it, right? You drop the mag, slid the, put it up. But I was doing that and like holding it out here like an idiot. Like I was holding the gun up saying clear and then putting it in my mag, in my, but it's little stuff like that that could get you disqualified. And so those are the things I know, like maybe listen to this, it doesn't sound like that big of a deal, but those are the things that kind of drive me. It's like, can I put myself in a position of discomfort and still act cognitively? That's something I'm excited about for the particular, in particular for the tactical games.
Yeah, because that specific rule, because I was there at the range when Nick, the owner of the Tactical Games, was explaining it to you. So that specific process you have to go through after shooting is for safety. You know, it's to make sure that you're not turning around and facing, you know, the judges, the crowd, with there being any possibility of there being, you know, a bullet in the chamber or obviously a source of feed. So it's a rule that wouldn't be, it's not like tactical, which is what Tim was saying, but it's super important for the way the sport is done. But I do like how it tests the fact that like, hey, can you go through this checklist, which would be super easy to do if you're just like, you know, doing it on your own, like going, okay, here's how I have to do. But in the heat of the moment, heart rate's up, adrenaline's jacked, like you're competing. Can you also be able to think? I think is a really interesting skill that we talked about this in the past, like the cool thing about the tactical games, testing things like accuracy and precision in a way that like the CrossFit games really can't. You know, like we've talked about, like, you know, like, sure, you can argue that a wall ball kind of tests that, but like, does it really? But I think that this also tests, you know, one of the traits that you're trying to improve in a way that like would be really tough to do at the CrossFit Games. Cause when do you really go in, you know, even when the workouts get announced like hours before, that you literally have to make like a split A-B decision or remember something in the heat of the event? Never really happens.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's so many examples. Like, I mean, I've had a lot of weird, crazy events at the CrossFit Games, but they're different. And then you don't get disqualified. So like, for example, like you get disqualified if you mess this up one time. And I think one of the benefits to this particular lesson is how can you react when you're emotional, when things are hot? Can you still be in control? And I think that that's something really powerful. So I was in a gondola this week. Okay. So I took Caden. There was an opportunity that came up for him to get ski lessons, privates. It was great. Awesome. Love it. And we were getting in a gondola and we were with one of his friends, and his friend's foot got stuck in the door of the gondola. Right. And the immediate reaction was for him to say to me, my foot is stuck in the gondola. Right. And I yanked the shit out of that foot and I got it out. Right. It was all good. But I told him after, I was like, hey man, I'm just letting you know that for in the future, like if you see a moment of panic like that, like, and it wasn't like he was like hyperventilating or going crazy. It's just that he immediately wanted to request for help. And I was trying to explain to him, hey dude, immediately you have to act now and act immediately, because what if someone wasn't here? Or by the time that I'm able to react to your foot being in the door, it might be too late. So you need to do both. You need to ask for support, but you also need to, you need to act immediately under pressure. And so that's something that I think the tactical game is going to hopefully continue to instill, at least for me, is how do you act cognitively under pressure when things are very like high risk? So that's been fun for me to expose myself to, because I think it's hard. Just like we talk about hitting a workout hard in the gym allows you to like compartmentalize and like positive self-talk, understand what's in your control. Doing stuff like this, I think translates to outside the range for those type of reasons, right? Can you act when under pressure in tough situations and act well? So anyways, the gondola is just an example of like, hey, you got to act now, act immediately, but you have to act right. Don't be crazy.
All good points. I have a very important question though. Is it gondola or gondola? Because I've always heard it as gondola. For a while, I didn't know what you were saying. And gondola? Then I figured it out. Gondola? I don't know what a gondola is. Maybe I'm wrong. Some a listener can let us know, but gondola? I've never heard it pronounced gondola.
Gondola?
Anyway, we can move on from that. You know, an example from, so dude, I'm seeing the light at the end of the tunnel with flight training, and it's super exciting, man. Like I am so close. So I have one night flight left, and then I've finished all of my hour requirements. Like I'm done. I have to study for my written exam, which shouldn't be so bad. And then just schedule enough flights with my instructor so that he feels comfortable and I feel comfortable passing my check ride. So the way that you actually get it's like getting your license. Like you schedule an appointment with someone that sits next to you, and they run you through like same thing as getting your driver's license. Obviously it's more involved and it's in an airplane, but yeah, man, like I'm super close. But one of the things that's going to be in the check ride that I also have to practice with my instructor, talking about like being able to react in high stress situations, even though like you're with your instructor. What?
Is he going to shut the engine off?
Oh, they do that too. But that's honestly, so them shutting the engine off and you having to do like a short final emergency landing, honestly, isn't that bad. It probably sounds worse than it is, but it's not that bad.
Wait, so how high do they shut the engine off at?
Usually around like 3,000. I mean, it honestly, the higher, the better. Because when you shut the engine off, the plane turns into a glider. And then the first thing that you want to do, so if the engine were to go off, it's ABC, it's airspeed, best place to land, and then go through your checklist. First thing you need to do is every plane has an ideal airspeed when you have no engine that's going to give you the longest glide distance. So you have to pitch the plane to, in my plane, it's 65 knots. So if I'm at 65 knots with no engine, that's going to be giving me the longest distance per the height that I am where I can find a best place to land.
How long can you go at 65 knots?
Well, it depends how high you are, right? So like if I'm 5,000 feet above the ground and I pitch 65, I'm going to have a pretty long distance that I can glide for.
So you're talking like 15 minutes.
No, not that long at all.
Like 5 minutes.
Yeah. It's not like super long, but it's longer than you think. It's not like I think a lot, like I thought this before I learned it, like engine comes off and like all of a sudden you're like, you know, you're going to like nosedive. Like that's not the case at all. So yes, that is one of the things that they do, but that's not even the one that I'm most nervous about. So this other thing that Wait, you have
they
to
turn
work
off
on.
The engine and turn it back on in the midair?
So you don't turn it off, like the power goes off, but you can pull the power to idle. So it's
like
the
you put
same.
Your car
It's
neutral, basically.
Exactly. Right. But the engine isn't off. Like it's not like you have to then restart the engine midair, which you could do, but no, then you just like, it's just a power lever. So it's going to idle. So it would be the same thing as losing your engine, but it's not actually turning the engine off.
Oh my God, bro. I would be fucked, dude. If you're in an airplane, it's like, then it goes, and then you just don't even hear the engine anymore. Oh my gosh. I would freak out. That would be, see, that's an example of what I'm talking about with the tactical games. Like
100%, man, because then like, that's where you have to remember. You have to remember airspeed. The fact that like airspeed, best place to land. And then your checklist, right? Like all the things that you should go through to try and get the airplane actually running again. And then if none of that works, then you just have to land the plane. Find somewhere that's, you know, flat and no trees and whatever, and just fly the plane.
You could land on a freeway, couldn't you, with the plane like that?
Yeah, but you ideally don't want to land on the, so the best place to land is like a field. And luckily, like it's really safe where I train because, you know, you're up there. There's so many fields to choose from. So that would be like the number one option. You can see up there. And actually you'd be surprised being up in the air, how many other like little private airstrips and runways there are, which even if they're private, obviously in case of an emergency, you can use whatever you need to use. Right. But what I was going to say, dude, that I'm actually super nervous about, and I haven't done this yet, but my instructor explained it to me, and talk about having to be cool under stressful situations. So one of the things that you have to train for is, so you have these things on called foggles that block everything aside from like the bottom corner of your eyes. And this is because we have to do some simulated instrument time.
The instruments,
yeah,
right? Yeah.
Yeah. So that I've done. But then this thing that we have to practice is you have the foggles on and you go chin to chest, close your eyes. The instructor takes controls and maneuvers the plane in a way where you'll be completely disoriented. So you're not going to know if the plane is pointing up, down, sideways, whatever.
Stop it.
Yes.
You haven't flipped it over, have you?
No. And you wouldn't flip it over. But the whole thing is then he says, okay, you can look up now. And without looking outside, because all you can see is your instruments, the plane is either going to be pointed completely up or completely down.
No.
Yes. And you have to recover. So if the plane is completely down, you have to go power idle, bring the nose up and recover. And if the plane is pointed completely up, you have to go full power, nose down, and try and get into a climb. And you have to react to that pretty quickly once you can actually see, just based on the instruments, like which way the nose is pointed.
And so, does he have a yoke too? Does he have one of those things?
Yeah,
too?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So just in case you like...
yeah. But like he was explaining this to me, dude, and talk about like stressful. And it was funny because the lesson that he was explaining it to me, my dad was in the back seat. So he was like, do you want to practice that now? And I was like, no, let's save it for like when no one's in the back seat.
Wait, because so
that could
you'll be in an
pretty
airplane,
gnarly.
You'll be like this. And then, but wouldn't you feel either you're completely forward or completely back?
No, man. It's super trippy. So one of the biggest reasons that crashes happen, especially in general aviation, is when people get into clouds and you can't see the outside. This is why you practice with the foggles, because you don't realize, man, when you can't see reference points outside, it is so disorienting. It doesn't take long and you honestly don't know. You don't know which way is up, which way is down. Like we don't realize, because our eyes are always open, how much our other senses tell you that, like, I'm standing this way, like that's over there, that's over there. When you lose all concept of your surroundings and you're in a machine that's just kind of like rumbling, which the plane is, you don't know, dude. And it could be pretty unnerving if you haven't practiced it, which is why you practice it. And which
hey,
is
have
why
you taken the plane straight up?
What do you mean?
Have you gone straight up in a plane? Like straight up?
And we practice stalls, which is essentially doing that. And then you just
you
recover
go straight
right
up
away.
And then it tips over this way again.
Yes.
Fuck that. How about the other way? You've gone straight down.
That we haven't done. No. Mm-mm.
Oh man. Woo. All right.
Yeah, well, man.
Gotta let us know.
Anyway, to kind of wrap it all up, it's so important to find these ways to like really be able to test like how you can react to moments that are pretty stressful and to do those in a safe, controlled setting. And obviously tactical games, very different than this, but similar in some ways, because there's going to be points in life where like you'll be forced into a situation where you have to make a decision, you know, here or there. And it's going to be super stressful. And I do firmly believe that, you know, putting yourself in these positions when they're in your control, it's obviously going to prepare you better for when they're outside of your control, like 100%, which I think it's why it's important. And you can do that through training, of course, but I think finding other ways to do it is super valuable. And it's one of the things that I didn't really expect to get out of, you know, the whole pilot journey, but it's been really, really beneficial.
Dude, well, yeah, same thing. I can't wait to hear when you pass your test. Yeah, that's awesome, man. I was just thinking about this idea too. We talk about this idea of providing, and I think that there's so many ways you can look into that about, you know, being able to make enough money to be able to give, being able to make enough money to be able to provide your kids with different things. And when life gets tough, having resources does make it easier. And, you know, anyways, but also we talk about experiences, right? And just as last week, this is just fresh on my mind, man, because of the fitness that I've maintained over so many years. And this is just a shout out to everybody who listens to this podcast, who's training hard, using our app, getting after workouts. Like I never had to be limited by my physicality when I was on the mountain. So we went for a day, my son took a private lesson and I was like kind of working at the time. And then I was able to get on the mountain for an hour by myself. I went and smashed, dude. I threw on some Jay-Z in the headphones and I went, it was just like an hour of just like hard. Then I met up with him and some friends and I basically took the kids on the mountain for the rest of the day. What was nice about it is that I never had to worry about feeling fatigued or thinking like my risk of injury was an increase because I was fatigued or being limited by my abilities in any way. I was able to just be able to go experience it with the kids and not be limited because of physical capabilities. And I think that that's one of the testaments to what we do at Train Hard is having the ability to provide these experiences because we're building this hedge on our fitness, because we're putting in the work every day. When opportunities like this come up out of nowhere, you're ready. You're able to provide those experiences to the kids. And this was just like really just front and center to me. Cause I'm, you know, cause dude, snowboarding in particular, like I forgot how fatiguing it can be on you when you're on an edge and you're doing whatever. Kid ended up skiing this time, which was fine. He really liked it. But I just think that for everybody listening, like we talk about what it means to train, provide, protect. For me, it's like protect, run, jump, climb, pull someone's foot out of a gondola, right? Because you have the speed. But we also talk about being able to provide. And I think like experiences are at the top of that. And so that's why we train. That's why you got to use the app. That's why you got to keep getting after it.
Dude, 100%, man. And, you know, sometimes it's a little hard and abstract to think about, because you've talked about this before, right? Like you want to be the fittest grandparent, you know, in the future. And like, I agree with you, but it's hard. It's impossible to envision what that's going to look like, right? Like what is 67-year-old Jason Kalipa going to look like? Like what are going to be the experiences that you go on with your grandchildren? Like you can't think about that now because it's impossible. However, one thing that's been super cool for me, man, and it just happened when we went on the San Diego trip. So we hiked Cowles Mountain, which is like it's a really like well-known hike in San Diego because it looks over, it's not like really hard. It's maybe 1,000 feet of climbing. And I think it's, I want to say it's like four miles, like there and back. So not a terrible hike, but it's like pretty steep. And it's definitely not like an easy walk in the park. Like, you know, you get sweaty. And, I put Shay on my back and took him the way up, which, you know, I was expecting to do and it was all good. It was cool. But my dad insisted on putting him on his back and bringing him down.
Yeah. And down is harder.
Dude. And he did. Yeah. And you know, it's funny because Shay loves my dad. It's actually really, really cute. It's really funny. He's like, since he was a little kid, he like always gravitated towards my dad. So he like also wanted to be with him. And to me, that was such a cool experience because it almost allowed me to really see what being a fit granddad could look like in the future. Because I was looking at it. It was right there. It was in front of me because we were hiking down. He was in front of me. Shay was facing backward. So he was facing me. And like the whole way down, it was so cool because like, that's literally why we train. Like, because I want to do that That's exactly what I want to be able to do. Cause my dad did it. No complaints, nothing. Like, my dad's super fit. He's always been active. And he's, you know, reaping the rewards of that now that he has grandkids. And it's just so cool to be able to see it come to life, because it makes it less abstract why we want to do this long-term.
Yep. That's it, man. That's it. Well, you heard it here first. If you're not on the newsletter, if you're not on the podcast, excuse me, on the app, if you're not getting after it, like, start now, start today, right? Just go out for a walk, start, you know, momentum, never zeros this mentality. And I think that when there is an opportunity, like what I had this week, skiing, snowboarding, right? Or what Gabe had walking down a, you know, mountain or up a mountain, like, when those opportunities come up, you'll never regret getting after it, right? Because you're going to be like, damn, it feels good. And that feeling is priceless. So make sure you're staying getting after it. Hit us up on the newsletter. If you have any questions, hit us up on the app, get after your training, but we're just here to support. So make sure you guys are sending any questions. I actually got a really good question from a guy in the Philippines the other day that he sent in over email that I'm excited to get to for the question of the week. And I'm not going to spoil it here, but it was a good question from the Philippines. So shout out to the team from the Philippines for listening to the podcast. But if you guys have any other questions for us, make sure you guys email them in, jason@th.fit, as in jason@trainhard.fit, but TH instead, because we will answer those questions on the podcast for the month of February.
It won't be spoiling it, but I'm curious, what's the question? If anything, it'll be a cool preview. What can we expect from this really good question? I want to hear from people if it's gondola or gondola.
Hang on, now that you put the pressure on me.
If you can't find it, it's fine. But wouldn't be spoiling anything if we knew what the question was.
Oh no. It wouldn't have been spoiling anything. So it had to do, so the question was, I wanted to read it verbatim, but it had to do with, hey, if everything got taken away tomorrow, what values, what would you focus on to rebuild? It was something along that nature. It was a better question.
That's a good question. Yeah.
Coming from the Philippines, like, dude, I've spent a lot of time in a lot is relative, but I've spent a decent amount of time in the Philippines. And the way he presented the question, I think sparked some good concepts, but that was the nutshell of it was like,
all right, perfect. So that'll be one of the Q&A episodes coming up in February. I'm excited to dive into that. That's a really good question, man. It's actually something I think about a lot. Cool.
Now I got to make sure that I didn't.
Oh, good. You don't have to find it, man.
No. Well, yeah, I'll have to find it later. So, well, on that note, send us in your questions, respond to the newsletter. I will make sure to get back to you. Gabe is also on, you know, different email threads we have. And I just appreciate you guys listening to the podcast. Make sure you go check out the Coffee Kalipas. Make sure you go check out the question of the week. And just keep training hard. Keep getting after it. Gabe, we're all good for today, huh?
All good, man. All good.